This is a Source Web Extra for Texas Public Radio's expanded COVID-19 coverage. I'm David Martin Davies. We have questions from listeners about how the determination is made that someone actually died from COVID-19. Also, it looks like it's going to be another long, hot summer here in San Antonio. How can coronavirus add to the total of heat-related fatalities? For answers, we've reached out to Dr. Ruth Berggren, the director of UT Health's Center for Medical Humanities and Ethics and Bexar County's new medical advisor. And so, Dr. Berggren, thank you for your time. And I'm going to play the first one from David. And here it goes.
Yes, hi, this is David Esparza. And I have a question about the count of the number of deaths within Bexar County. I know of at least one person who was died of COVID-19, but on their death certificate said they had died of pneumonia and not COVID-19. So I'm concerned that the numbers that we're getting are not accurate. And so how are the numbers being reported by on the Bexar County website compared to vital statistic numbers of, you know, how many deaths have there been in Bexar County for any reason, and compare those to the same time frame in other years? Are they matching up with the rise of today with the numbers being reported by COVID-19? Thank you.
So that's an excellent question. Sounds like a true epidemiologist in the making there who asked this question. And I can't give you a direct answer, but I will help unpack what the issues are, okay? There's always a two-year lag in vital statistics reporting. So our data on mortality goes up to the state of Texas first, and then it comes back down to us. And we right now can tell you what the crude mortality rate per 100,000 people was in Bexar County in 2017 and 2018, but there's a two-year lag. So using death certificate information to determine the cause of death when you're looking at an outbreak or a specific issue like COVID, or let's say a couple years ago we were very focused on maternal mortality, that was also problematic because the cause of death is so nonspecific on the death certificate. Now, on the brighter side, COVID cases are being reported to MetroHealth, and the outcomes of those cases are also reported. So we will have, and we are, keeping track of COVID deaths at in our MetroHealth department separately from death certificates. Okay? So if a known COVID positive person dies of pneumonia, the death certificate will in fact say pneumonia, but it will get counted locally as a COVID death, but not necessarily on that death certificate. Now, that would require changing how the death certificates are laid out. So I hear this concern about undercounting, but I would counter that concern by saying that everybody in healthcare is highly attuned to this, and we are testing very, very widely. A person who dies in any hospital of pneumonia, there's high likelihood that that person's going to get tested, and we're testing everywhere we possibly can. Now, the concern raises another issue, though, about excess mortality that I want to bring to light. The excess mortality that we can expect due to COVID is going to be both direct and indirect. So far, it looks like the excess mortality due to COVID is kind of low, but there could be a whole secondary cause of excess mortality due to not seeking care during this shutdown time, and also because people lost their jobs and they lost their health insurance. And we know that being uninsured itself, just by itself, being uninsured increases your mortality risk. So what's actionable from that, from these insights and from these concerns, are people need to continue to take care of their health. You know, if you haven't gotten behind on your cancer screening, go get your cancer screening. If you've lost your insurance, look at what other options are available to you. In Bexar County, we have something called CareLink, and make sure you are accessing all that you are eligible for.
The question about pneumonia and whether or not that is the cause of death and that's not COVID-19, reminds me of what we saw during the AIDS epidemic. People frequently died of other issues related to having a compromised immune system because of AIDS, and that's what ended up on the death certificate.
Yeah, and so that's why, you know, you can't put every single diagnosis in the world on a death certificate. You have to list the most proximal cause of death. And then if people want to have a granular understanding about individual disease entities, it usually requires a combination of that death certificate and looking at ICD-10 codes in the chart.
We have another voicemail. This is from Albert.
Hello, my name is Albert Campos. My question today is, we've been getting antibody testing completed in some major cities like Los Angeles, New York, for instance, and the antibody tests are yielding a lot of people who were asymptomatically positive but were almost unaffected by the virus itself. By the count that's coming in, that increases the assumed infection rate from where it currently was prior to all the antibody testing up by 20 to 40%, which means that the chances of dying from COVID-19 are drastically lower. So why do we still want to continue to shield that information from getting out to the public? And why are we not taking all the data that's available and not just from the models that have been consistently incorrect that were provided by the World Health Organization and the CDC? Appreciate the answer. Thank you very much.
Yeah, valid concern. And undoubtedly, as we've learned more and more about asymptomatic infections, if you take the total number of people locally or in the world that have COVID infection, then when you count up the deaths and compare to that, the mortality rate is going to be a lot lower than the 3 to 4% that's being reported. I don't think that anybody's withholding any data. And we don't have widespread antibody testing yet. The reason we don't is, first, it took a while to develop the test. And secondly, there are a lot of tests out there. It's hard to know which one to use, and they haven't been really validated. We're working on that. We're working on it locally. There's going to be a random sampling of households in San Antonio to look at antibodies. And I think we should all have confidence that as soon as those data are available, that they will be shared with the public. It just takes some time.
During the long, hot summer in San Antonio, we frequently have heat advisories. Becomes dangerously hot for elderly people, and we have to do things like open cooling centers and try to provide ways for people to manage during the heat. With the COVID-19 outbreak, that's going to become much more complicated. Do you see that we could have an increase in heat deaths? And should that also be looked at as like another spinoff of fatalities coming from COVID-19?
So yes and yes. And the question is what to do about it. I think we should all be encouraged that there are guidelines for opening centers and even libraries and places where folks who don't have good air conditioning at home might be able to go and spend time during the day to cool down. There's also, I appreciate this question because it illustrates the insight that as a community, we need to recognize who's at risk and proactively try to help out that group in order to prevent mortality. And, you know, one of the top groups we need to be thinking about are the folks over the age of 65. And it's important to identify who is lacking access to cooling and then help them identify where they can go.
What is the phased approach to reopening San Antonio, and how do we get from one phase to the next? What is the best case timeline? What can we do to speed things up, and what will hinder that process?
Okay, well, that's a very comprehensive question. Thank you for it. And the Health Transition Team just published a 50-plus page report, which is available to all. It's in the SA Express News. It's on various websites, and so I invite people to look at it for greater detail, but the broad brushstrokes are this, and they mirror in many ways what the governor has put forth. Phase one in our Health Transition Team report refers to where we're at now, which is stay home, work safe, save lives, with lots and lots of restrictions in place and many mitigating interventions. Phase two is where we cautiously move forward at a reduced capacity with lots of monitoring. And the conditions that are recommended by many folks and many authorities for phase two are four. They're basically four progress indicators. First, you want to see a sustained decline in the number of cases over a 14-day period. Secondly, you want to make sure you have adequate testing available. Thirdly, you want to have adequate capacity for contact tracing, because that results in telling you who needs to be quarantined to prevent further spread. And finally, you need to have a healthcare system that's ready to go. You've got the beds, the ventilators, the PPE, and all of that. So those are the progress indicators. We have made good progress on some, but not all of those in San Antonio. Our healthcare system is prepared. People feel good about that. We are doing contact tracing, but we don't have the full complement of people needed to be trained, which is estimated to be 175 additional people. We're making lots of progress on testing, and we still lag behind what the projections are for needs. So we can do about 1,600 a day here, and we'd like to be able to have the capacity for 3,000 a day to feel like we're really in a safe situation in a phase two. There does seem to be a sustained decrease over 14 days, but it requires you being willing to look at blips. So technically, we're on, I think, a fourth day of every single day is less than the day before, but we are close to 14 days. If you look at where the peak was 14 days ago, you can the line goes down from there. So, Dave, that's the progress indicators, and those are the ones that help you know if it's okay to move from phase one to phase two. And then when you're in this phase two, you got to watch what's going on. And who does that? It's our Metro Health Department. It keeps track. And the stats that they're going to be watching are looking to see if the percentage of positive tests goes up, meaning of all the people who get tested for whatever reason, if we start seeing a rise in the percentage that are positive, that will be of concern. Health system stress, like running out of PPE, decreasing the number of beds, ventilators, or a rise in emergency calls. If health system stress is going up, that's a warning indicator. And then the other parameter that's being watched is the number of days to doubling of the cases. And that's stretched out for a very long time right now. But if we started to see a doubling over a short period of time, these would all be signs that A, we shouldn't expand further, and B, we might need to retreat. And who gets to decide will be a combination of our health authorities and our city and county leaders. So that's the big, broad brushstrokes. What other aspects of that would you like me to unpack?
Well, one thing about who gets to decide, it's also the people get to decide in a way that, I mean, if it becomes apparent that we have a deadly virus that is galloping through our community, people are going to go back into their homes and hunker down. I mean, they can reopen these businesses, but people do not have to go to them.
Yes, you're absolutely right. And, you know, one of the areas that's related to that thought is the issue of masking. And as people are probably aware right now, the governor's report or guidance says masking is a good idea, but it's not going to be enforced and it's not mandated. And I think locally, folks would really, really like to adhere to the CDC's guidance about masking and continuing to put masks on everybody, even down to the age of anyone over 2 years old, if they're going to be in public. That doesn't mean when you're exercising or you're out for a walk, but if you're in public spaces where it's possible that people will infringe on that 6-foot radius around you, you should be masked.
Dr. Ruth Bergen, thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it. And thank you for answering these questions from our listeners.
All right. Thank you, Dave. Have a good day.
Dr. Ruth Bergen is the director of UT Health's Center for Medical Humanities and Ethics and the Bexar County Medical Advisor. If you have questions for Dr. Bergen, call our voicemail line 210-615-8982. David Martin Davies, Texas Public Radio News.